Real is also the one that is the most political in the sense that, unlike other municipalities where the issues are more immediate and practical, in Montreal they are projected on a more ideological stage. Thus, one can indeed identify more progressive positions, or at least more in tune with the aspiration of the grassroots, and positions that are more identified with interests external to the city inhabitants. The large real estate corporations or other large companies located in the city. With some interpretative laxity, we can therefore speak of left and right in the Montreal municipal confrontation. In all, 10 candidates are running for mayor of Montreal, and well over 100 aspiring to be councillors, as many others also aspire to be mayors of the 18 boroughs that elect their mayors. The borough of Ville-Marie does not elect its mayor. The one who is elected mayor of the city is by right mayor of the central borough. An anomaly and a lack of democracy that the residents of this borough have tried to change, but to no avail. Of the 10 contenders, only 3 have a real chance of winning. The current incumbent, Valérie Plante, with her Projet Montréal party, former mayor Denis Coderre and his Ensemble Montréal, and challenger Barama Holness, leading the Mouvement Montréal. In the previous election, Valérie Plante raised what was, at the time, a progressive platform. However, as she took over the municipal administration, she revealed a whole series of inconsistencies. To begin with, in constituting her executive committee, a sort of ministerial cabinet at the municipal level, she appointed an overwhelming majority of white and francophone councillors. There were only 2 exceptions. Valérie Plante thus slammed the door in the face of Montreal's ethnic diversity. Her centralizing and authoritarian personality was immediately apparent in the expulsion from the party of 2 of the borough mayors who had been elected with her, Sue Montgomery in NDG Cote-Neige and Juliana Fumagalli in Parc Extension Villeray Saint-Michel. The mayor also made many unilateral decisions driven by her own personal preferences, such as the case of adding Bernard Landry's name to the future Griffintown station of the REM, despite the opposition of the neighborhood, the Irish community, and the people of the borough, since this former premier and leader of the Parti Québécois never had a connection with this sector of the city. For his part, Denis Coderre, a former federal Liberal MP, who prepared his comeback for which he even wrote a book, has said, without much modesty, that the previous election was a referendum on his personality. Boy, does Mr. Coderre have a big ego. No, elections are about matters a little bit more substantial than whether or not one likes Mr. Coderre. Those who do seem to like Coderre's eventual return to the mayor's office must be the big real estate companies. Coderre wants to raise the number of floors for skyscrapers to be built in the city center. That will go somewhere or somehow against the grain of the needs of the people who require construction, but not the kind of building that candidate Coderre seems to like. Montreal needs more social and affordable housing. What did characterize Coderre in his previous administration was the renaming of some streets. He made a point of naming one of downtown's main commercial arteries after Robert Bourassa. A mediocre provincial politician always seemed to waver between federalism and nationalism. Now, Coderre has even raised the idea of changing the name of Place du Canada. His excuse is that it will be to honor, instead, the indigenous victims of residential schools. In other words, it will be a demagogic gesture to curry favor with the First Nations. The problem is that the indigenous people have never asked for such a thing. the just demands for apologies and reparations from indigenous peoples have never included a rejection of Canada as a state. Coderre, in the end, only seems to be seeking support among Quebec nationalists who hate anything that mentions Canada. But the Aboriginals have never asked for such a thing. This is, by the way, the clumsiest, not to say stupid, proposal by a politician aspiring to the mayoralty, while at the same time disrespecting the citizens of the country. Balarama Holness is the emerging figure, the only candidate who is non-white, from an ethnic community, but with vast experience in community work. Interestingly enough, his party's slate of candidates includes people from the widest ethnic variety. In some ways, although he is seen as what is called the underdog in this race, he is actually the most interesting candidate with the most politically progressive platform. His proposal to call a referendum on whether Montreal becomes a bilingual city caused controversial and dissent, that's true. But in fact, and this is the great thing about this city, Montreal is de facto bilingual, even if not de jure. I receive my property taxes paper in English, for example. Perhaps this issue can wait and is not urgent, although it is essential to note that Montreal is, in fact, bilingual, and very good that it is so. Moreover, it is a city that is not only bilingual, but in many cases multilingual and multicultural. Therefore, if we want something for this election, whoever wins the mayoralty will hopefully not have an absolute majority in the city council. This is important, especially in the cases of the two very authoritarian candidates, Denise Coderre and Valérie Plante, because they can do whatever they want with an absolute majority, which will not be desirable for Montrealers. Our desire is to see a city council with racially, ethnically, and linguistically diverse people, because only then will it reflect the Montreal citizenry. And this is the only way to prevent Coderre or Plante from imposing their authoritarian models and disregarding citizen consultation. We hope that Latino voters, as members of an ethnic minority, will vote accordingly. Good day.
Yo soy como el principio de algo que ha terminado. Me hice amigo del tiempo por andar preocupado. Y soy en cualquier parte tan solo un pensamiento por madurar la idea de un amor que sea eterno. Dos fuerzas paralelas me van mostrando cosas y veo así la vida. Para algunos hermosa, se alimenta la envidia por no tener la diosa, carne, hueso y un rayo de esa luz que buscamos. ¿Qué cosas tiene el mundo? Ayer niños jugaron. ¿Qué cosas tiene el mundo? ¿Cuántas madres hoy lloraron? ¿Qué misterio es la vida? Por tenerla luchamos, sin importarnos nada, por ella hasta matamos. Yo soy de la materia, la formación humana, y mi espíritu puede mover cualquier montaña. Soy fe en la esperanza de tantas religiones. Yo soy por mil razones del hombre esa confianza. Imaginariamente yo voy a donde quiero, jamás me desespero, porque yo creo en Dios como la esencia misma de la perfecta idea. Por tantas cosas feas, por eso existe amor. ¿Qué cosas tiene el mundo? Ayer niños jugaron. ¿Qué cosas tiene el mundo? ¿Cuántas madres hoy lloraron? ¿Qué misterio es la vida? Por tenerla luchamos, sin importarnos nada, por ella hasta matamos.
Get back! diablo es una historia feliz y aún solo un cuento de horror. Ya nada puedo hacer, eclipse total del amor. Eclipse total del amor.
Y ahora vamos al fichero latino de hoy, 31 de octubre. Entre los eventos tenemos el Consulado General de la República Argentina en Montreal les invita a visitar la exposición Estereotipia, que estará abierta hasta el 28 de noviembre, donde participa la artista argentina Nora Golic.
Esto es en el Centro Cultural y Comunitario Henri Lemieux, 7644 Rue Édouard Lassalle.
Dentro de las publicaciones, edición inglesa del libro Presencia chilena en la Belle Provence, Chilean Present in la Belle Provence, escrito por Sergio Martínez y Roberto Arbaz, ya está a la venta en librería Argos en el 1841A de Saint-Catherine Oeste y en la librería Paragraph, esto es en el 2220 de McGill College Avenue. El precio es de $10 más impuestos.
The book Chilean Presence in la Belle Provence, English version of the book Presencia Chilena en la Belle Provence, written by Sergio Martinez and Roberto Hervas, is already on sale at Argos Bookstore, located at 1841A St. Catherine West, and Paragraph Bookstore on 2220 McGill College Avenue. Price $10 flat tax.
L'édition française du livre Présence chilienne dans la Belle Provence est maintenant disponible à la librairie de l'Université de Montréal, c'est-à-dire dans les 3200 Champs-Brillant, à la librairie Bertrand, 430 Saint-Pierre-et-Vieux-Montréal, et en ligne sur le site de Renobré. Le prix est de $10 plus taxes.
Y el anuncio de interés público de la vacuna contra el COVID-19. Consultar y reservar en línea en el sitio web Clic Santé en francés e inglés. También se puede llamar por teléfono al 1-877-644-5545. Repito, 1-877-644-4545. O recuerde que ahora estar vacunado y presentar su pasaporte de vacunación es necesario para ir a un restaurante, un bar, un cine o una sala de conciertos.
Y el tiempo para hoy, según la Oficina Meteorológica Nacional de Canadá, será lluvioso, con una temperatura máxima de 11 grados. Para esta noche, lluvia intermitente con una mínima de 7 grados.
Y recuerde que si usted o su organismo comunitario tiene alguna información que desean difundir en el fichero latino, comuníquese con nosotros a Latin Time a nuestra dirección electrónica laplaza.info@gmail.com.
O también puede enviarnos un mensaje en Facebook, vaya a www.facebook.com/tiempolatino.latintime y de paso denos un like. Nuestra página Facebook también se actualiza ahora diariamente con noticias y reportajes sobre lo que ocurre en América Latina y el mundo. Síganos en Facebook.
Y Tiempo Latino es escuchado en América Latina y en todo el mundo a través del Internet. Entre al sitio de CKUT en la siguiente dirección, www.ckut.ca.
Y usted también puede acceder a nuestro programa en cualquier otro horario simplemente yendo al archivo de CKUT en el sitio web ya mencionado y presionando Latin Time.
And a happy Halloween to all our listeners.
Y un feliz Halloween a todos nuestros oyentes.
Estación, sobre un tiempo en mi rincón, solo una canción por ti. Tus pasos, tu aroma, tu viento, tu voz, y nunca un adiós. Solo una canción por ti. Tu sombra evitaré, la sonrisa más letal. El recuerdo más mortal, la danza más fatal, la que escribe tu voz. No puedo hablarte así, no puedo verte así. Un cúmulo de himnos de ayer. Las tardes de muertos eclipsan el bar y los deudos callarán su rabia y todo es por ti. En tanto en las noches de fusilamientos, gente desaparecerá. ¿En dónde está? Sobre texto de vida, sobre texto de paz, sobre texto de amar, sobre texto de luchar. Mentiras nada más. La que escribe tu voz, no puedo amarte así, pero espero verte allí. Un cúmulo de himnos de ayer y sin tu voz. Tu nombre escupiré, la sonrisa más letal, el recuerdo más mortal, la danza más fatal.
Y esto ha sido todo por hoy. Tiempo Latino es una producción del Taller Latinoamericano de Comunicaciones.
Latin Time is a Latin American Communications Workshop production.
Estuvimos hoy con ustedes.
Our team today.
Daniel Lara y Sergio Martínez en las voces.
Sergio Martínez and Daniel Lara at the mics.
Y Rommel Cajavilca en la producción técnica, la compaginación y la selección musical.
And Rommel Cajavilca in the technical production, edition and music selection.
Manténgase en la sintonía de CKUT, nuestro próximo programa de International Radio Report.
Stay tuned to CKUT, next the International Radio Report.
Tengan todos ustedes un feliz domingo.
Have a happy Sunday.
Latest news from the world of radio every Sunday morning at 10:30 on the International Radio Report on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and online at CKUT.ca.
Hi everyone, welcome to the International Radio Report for Sunday, October the 31st. It's Halloween. Happy
yes.
Halloween to all of our listeners out there. My name's Sheldon. The other voice you hear is Jill, and we are here every week at 10:30 Eastern, 14:30 UTC right now. But next week, of course, with the time change back to standard time, we'll still be on at 10:30 Eastern, but the UTC time will be 15:30 UTC. So keep that in mind for next week. 10:30 Eastern Standard Time and 15:30 UTC beginning next week for our show.
And it's not impossible that the time that is going to air on CKUT will not be correct.
Yeah, we've always had a little difficulty with that during the switchover. So we'll keep you updated as to, you know, where to find the show. You might be best to go to the YouTube recording next time around if things get out of sync with the time change, as they often do at CKUT. So keep that in mind. We'll post up a reminder of it as well. If you want to reach us by email, our address is radioreport@yahoo.com. We are live streaming and archived at the CKUT website, ckut.ca. Our Facebook group had a bit of a jump this week. It is International Radio Report. We have new members, Bobby, Gordon, Sam, Ken, and Walter, bringing us to 643. We thank all of you guys for joining. And our YouTube channel, which I mentioned earlier, if you want to catch the show after an hour or so after it airs and onward from there, also go back and listen to previous shows. It's youtube.com/International Radio Report. So we start off today's show with some sad news in our local Montreal area, and some of our CIDX members will probably, some may know of this story, some may not, but we lost one of our longtime members here in Montreal, also a gentleman very active in the ham radio field as well in Montreal, particularly with the Montreal Amateur Radio Club. And also he was involved in marine radio. He taught with the Power Squadron and taught marine radio license courses. Jim Hay, passed away this past week. His call sign, VE2VE. And we received the details from a friend of his who had been helping him out over the last few months, his friend Roman. And he wrote the following. Fellow friends and family of Jim Hay, James Robert Hay passed away at 5.04 p.m. on Friday, October the 22nd, in the company of his brother Dave Wilson. At this time, no details about arrangements are available. As noted last Thursday, early on Friday morning, Jim was transferred from his apartment to the Teresa Deller Palliative Care Residence, formerly known as the West Island Palliative Care Residence, where he was able to spend his last few hours with dignity and love. The staff at the residence was, as expected, great in their compassion and care. On a personal note, I'm glad that I was able to visit Jim and bid him farewell scarcely an hour before his passing. Jim had been battling a number of ailments over the last number of years, kept a stiff upper lip, and always thought that, you know, whenever we asked him how he was doing, he would always say, as well as could be expected, was one of his lines. And anyway, so I know the last couple months were pretty difficult for him. And I know Janice had been to visit him as well and said that he had not been doing well. So anyway, see, he was also responsible for keeping our CIDX website up and running for us. So we'll be, you know, we thank him for all that he did for us with CIDX as well. So if we have more details on any memorials or what have you, we'll pass that information along once we receive it. So we hope he's in a better place. Yep. And somewhere where all the signals are nice and clean and clear.
Nice DX, absolutely. Yeah. He really was passionate about radio, and I remember every time there was some online ham radio course, he would send me a little message saying, hey, you know that there's the new virtual ham radio course from Radio Amateurs of Canada starting soon.
So, yeah. He was a rail buff, too. I know our friends down in Massachusetts, John Fisher, Eric Cottrell, they're both into trains and, you know, vintage railways and all that. And Jim was big into that as well. So they used to exchange information a lot on that also. So really sad news to hear of Jim's passing.
So today is Halloween, and there is going to be a special show from Texas Radio Shortwave for a scary Halloween cruise on WRMI. So it is going to be November 1st UTC, which is going to be tonight, a Sunday night here in North America. So WRMI will sponsor Texas Radio Shortwave's annual Halloween cruise on Monday, November 1st at 02 UTC on 93.95 kHz. That's Sunday night tonight, October 31st at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Second Mate Susan will play Captain Rick's favorites by the following artists: Mega Drive, Ooze, Ghoulthown, Johnny Chops and Razors, Drowning Pool, Pantera, Ignatius, Cat Slash, Butthole Surfers, Dark Rooms, and Blood Rock. As if these songs aren't scary enough, there's a special spooky EQSL available for detailed reception reports covering a minimum of 20 minutes of the program. And reports should be sent to texasradiosw@gmail.com. So this could be some interesting listening tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern, 02 UTC, 93.95 kHz via WRMI. And of course, if you're to be on the radio tonight, one of the things you might want to do is make sure that you chase four pirates. There will probably be some Halloween pirates showing up tonight with special programs and all sorts of, you know, Halloween sounds, scary sounds of all sorts. The best place to listen to is from 6850 to 7000 kHz, from about 5000 to 5200 kHz, 4000 to 4200 kHz. Probably 90% of all the pirates are in there. And of course, hfunderground.com is where you can go and check out who's on the air and even participate if you open a free account. And of course, that could be a lot of fun to monitor the different pirates that could show up tonight with all sorts of spooky material. Remember to have any of your devices, computer, smartphones, or tablets with some slow scan TV decoding software, because a lot of them will send pictures, and a lot of them will probably have spooky EQSLs to go with their programming tonight. So make sure that you actually tune the bands starting, you know, late afternoon local time and throughout the night, and don't forget the special show at 02 UTC.
Yeah, you may have heard some stuff earlier this week too, the past week, because some stations, you know, generally are on a few days before Halloween. So whatever you've heard, if you want to share any of that with us, put a posting up on our Facebook page if you like. You can do some of that in real time tonight if you're hearing some of the pirates, and people may want to check out there as well. But as Jill said, hfunderground.com is really going to be the place to be to stay on top of stuff in just about real time as DXers out there find the various pirate broadcasts. We move to Ontario next, where we have a really strange story. You know, wherever you may be around the world listening to us, you know, there's various ways that you can get your power, your electricity. In Canada, we have hydropower in many locations. Here in Quebec, we have very affordable hydropower. It's one of our really nice benefits in Quebec. But not so much in the rest of Canada. And this is a story that comes from CBC News by John Lancaster. The headline is, "Facing sky-high connection fees, rural Ontarians go off the grid, including two radio stations." When Craig Timmermans set out to build a new headquarters for his companies in Northern Ontario, he reached out to the power company to find out how much it would cost to connect him to the grid. He says he expected to pay a few thousand dollars, given that the nearest hydro pole was across the street, only about 45 meters away. He was shocked to find out that the cost would be $80,000. He says, "I thought that was just totally outrageous. Hydro One, which distributes electricity for most rural customers in Ontario, eventually reduced the cost to $25,000. It was still too much, according to Timmermans. And then on top of that, to pay, you know, an electrical bill, probably at around $400 or $500 a month for the rest of my life and only increasing. I thought, well, now's the time to go off grid." Last summer, Timmermans' two radio stations, Great Lakes Country 103.1 and Hits 100.7, went live from their new home in Little Current, Ontario, about 90 kilometers southwest of Sudbury, the first off-grid radio stations in Canada. They, along with the internet service provider that Timmermans also owns, are powered by 24 solar panels and a wind turbine. Combined, the system produces 8 kilowatt hours, more than enough to run his offices, radio studios, the central air conditioning, and the servers that keep his internet customers connected year-round. It cost him $23,000. On top of that, we have no more power bills after that. In winter, he says he needs a propane furnace to heat the building. A separate wind and solar array mostly powers the station's transmitters, which belt out 77,500 watts of radio signal as far south as the Bruce Peninsula. The rest comes from the traditional power grid, but not for long, Timmerman hopes. Powering the transmitters used to cost a small fortune, $6,000 a month. Our current rate is about $1,500 now, he told CBC News. With more solar panels that we're installing currently, I hope to bring that bill down close to zero and will basically use Hydro One power as a backup. And so what that basically means is a saving of $6,000. That's another employee that we're going to be able to hire. Just unbelievable amounts of money.
Absolutely.
The
incredible
fact that they would go from $80,000 and drop it, though, to $25,000 should tell you that, you know, $80,000 has got to be some kind of a ripoff.
Oh, totally. I had to smile a little bit because as they're searching to get more power and moving into a new place in Little Current.
Yes, they're going to have a Little Current from hydro, that's for sure.
Yep.
Perfectly named place. Anyways, we'll see. You know, I'm sure other smaller towns and whatever may be watching this, the first off-grid radio stations in Canada. Maybe some others will be looking at this down the road. But, you know, ingenuity shines here. I'm deciding, no, I'm not going to be taken by this, and I'm going to come up with a cheaper solution.
Yep, and it's the time a lot of the solar power and the solar panels, all of those, the prices are going down. So it's getting cheaper and cheaper to actually get off the grid. So maybe that's going to also encourage some people to do the same thing rather than paying, you know, those exorbitant fees. Well, of course, for solar panels, we need to have some sun, and the sun is extremely active this week. Solar activity has been high. There are several sunspot groups on the sun. Actually, there is a sunspot number of 96. And the sun has actually unleashed a series of powerful flares. 4 M flares and 1 X flare, and all of that in like 24 hours. And it's from the same sunspot, which is 2887. It's Earth-directed, which means that as the images come through, we see that a big coronal mass ejection pretty much heading our way. So that means that conditions can change rapidly. Right now, the forecast is for a G3 class solar storm or geomagnetic storm that could happen. It could be ongoing as the show is playing, but it could be arriving also today. So if conditions are changing, that might actually be because of this. And it'll be interesting to see if you are in a dark area closer to the poles, if you're in a northern, you know, in Canada and most of the northern states of the United States. Maybe it could be a good idea to go out and check for auroras tonight, because it'd be interesting to see Halloween auroras. That's kind of spooky at the same time.
Yeah, that's a good timing there, that's for sure.
Yep. So conditions are high. The solar flux is at 112 as we're recording, probably going to rise even a little more. It shows the high frequencies are propagating really well when, of course, there's no solar flares happening. 25 megahertz WWV is coming in super strong, and there's a lot of activity on the high frequencies. 10 meters is open. So for those that say, hey, 10 meters is dead, well, try it out. It's the time. And, of course, no significant coronal hole. So what's going to really be the major problem for propagation could be the fact that we have that geomagnetic storm. So it's time to, of course, make sure that you turn on that radio and listen.
This is Peter Laws in Norman, Oklahoma. AM, FM, shortwave, amateur radio, and more. You'll hear all the latest news from the world of radio each week with Sheldon and Jill on the International Radio Report on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
We move next to the United States once again with a story from CNN by Megan Vasquez. President Biden has nominated the first female chair of the FCC. President Joe Biden announced on Tuesday that he's nominating Jessica Rosenworcel to lead the FCC, which would make her the first woman to serve in the role if she's confirmed by the Senate. It's the honor of a lifetime to be designated to serve as FCC chair, she said, as she tweeted on Tuesday, thanking Biden, her family, and her mentors. I wouldn't be here without those who came before and paved the way. She also said she was looking forward to working with two other newly announced nominees, Gigi Sohn, a nominee for commissioner of the FCC, and Alan Davidson, the nominee to be Assistant Secretary for Communications and Information at the National Telecommunications and Information Administration at the Department of Commerce, so that modern communications reach all. Rosenworcel was previously a commissioner at the FCC since 2012 and is currently the acting chairwoman. She's the second woman to serve as the acting chairwoman. She served as senior communications counsel for the Senate Committee on Commerce, Science, and Transportation before joining the FCC. In a statement announcing Rosenworcel's formal nomination to be a commissioner with the designation as chair, the White House said that during her time at the FCC, she has worked to promote greater opportunity, accessibility, and affordability in our communication services in order to ensure that all Americans get a fair shot at 21st century success. From fighting to protect an open internet, to ensuring broadband access for students caught in the homework gap through the FCC's Emergency Connectivity Fund, to making sure that households struggling to afford internet services stay connected through the Emergency Broadband Benefit Program. She's been a champion for connectivity for all, the statement added. So basically it's promoting her to the permanent position as opposed to acting position that she had held up to now.
Hopefully it's going to change the way the FCC has been in the past, almost in the past 10 years. The FCC, when Ajit Pai was there, there was a lot of controversy and a lot of decisions that were really not made to help out most people in, you know, communications, internet access, and all of that. Hopefully that's going to be changed, reversed, and things are going to get better with her now being there. And that, it sounds good already with the help that she wants to connect people and make sure that everybody can be on board. Still too many people not connected to the internet or high-speed internet, actually. So let's hope that things go really good from here. So, there's a new museum to recognize Warsaw radio station that was second biggest in the world. This is via the Southgate Amateur Radio News. In memory of what was once the second tallest radio transmission station in the world, scientists are looking to set up a museum to commemorate its history. Built after Poland regained independence at the end of the First World War by 1923, half of Europe was sending telegrams to the USA via the Transatlantic Radio Telegraphic Broadcasting Center in Warsaw. Consisting of 10 massive 126-meter-tall towers, that's over 430 feet, the radio station's transmitter was powerful enough to reach both North and South America. The Warsaw station was also one of the best equipped in the world with two machine transmitters of 200 kilowatts, each being powered by a 500 kilowatt diesel-powered generator, ensuring 24-hour communication with the U.S. When World War II broke out following Hitler's invasion of Poland, German troops captured the station, allowing the Nazis to communicate with their U-boat fleets and with Japan. At the end of the war, they destroyed it, the detonation of which broke windows of houses over 16 kilometers away. That is one massive station, I can tell you.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about this, actually. I was quite interested when I saw the story. We're going to post a link to a website about this station and about the museum that they're planning. So it's a piece of radio history that sort of escaped me, I know. I hadn't really heard anything about this before.
Yeah, I've read something about that, but now that I've actually looked at this article, I want to learn more. Must have been quite impressive to see all of that over there.
Yeah, to be able to communicate, with U-boats, they would have had to use, very low frequency for that. And to be able to, based in Poland, to reach North and South America and also reach Japan on the other end was pretty impressive. So you check out the link on that we'll post. You can learn a lot more about this historic station, which sadly was destroyed. Would have been interesting to have it up and running today, that's for sure.
Yeah, and when that detonation that broke windows 16 kilometers away, they wanted to make sure that it was going to disappear from the map.
Yeah, exactly.
Today, by the way, is the new schedules that are taking effect for shortwave broadcasts. So today, the B21 schedules are starting. If you try to tune or will try to tune some of the stations, your favorite broadcasts, and it's not there, it's probably not disappeared. It's just that it changed its frequency. Some transmissions might have to also shift with time as we have the time changes next week for North America, and there'll be time changes in Europe also. I don't remember which weekend is Europe, if it's after or before we do it. But one thing for sure is that the schedules online are not going to be accurate. So all the apps that you use are not going to work very well. So for the next few days to a couple of weeks, we might be a little lost as to where stations are and what frequencies and what are we listening to when we hear something. But that's the winter schedules that are taking effect in the Northern Hemisphere. Of course, Southern Hemisphere is the summer schedules. So, slowly we'll get there, and different websites will update their schedules, and that will help us find, once again, what is on what frequency and what time. HFCC.org, HFCC.org, they have the schedules that the radio stations actually have sent for broadcasts. It's kind of difficult to really understand the schedules there, because often it's not the name of the station, but the organization behind the transmitter site that is in the list. But it can help out if you want to try to find who is who and where. That list can help as the schedules eventually will be up to date. So we've got some upcoming ham contests.
Yeah, we have a few for next weekend that you might want to check out. One fairly large one for CW operators, which we'll give you in a second here. But first off, the Ukrainian DX contest is taking place from 1200 Zulu November 6th to 1200 November the 7th, sponsored by the Ukrainian Contest Club. It's running 1.8 through 28 megahertz, no work bands though. And it is both CW and SSB, so a little something for everyone there.
There's the ARRL Sweepstakes Contest, CW, 21 Zulu November 6th to 03 Zulu November 8th, sponsored by the American Radio Relay League. The contest objective to support amateur self-training in radio communications, including improving amateur operating skills, conducting technical investigations, and intercommunicating with other amateurs. Stations in the United States and Canada, including territories and possessions, exchange information with as many other U.S. and Canadian stations as possible on the 160, 80, 40, 20, 15, and 10 meter bands. And that is Morse code, CW only.
Yeah, that's a pretty major contest.
Yes.
So you may, if you're into CW, you'll want to participate in that. And it might be a good time to try practicing some of your CW.
Yeah.
Although in some of these contests, there's some of the super high speed guys.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So that might be a little tricky, but give it a listen. It's on all of the major bands. And finally, another CW contest, a high speed, which we just talked about, the High Speed Club CW contest is 1400 to 1700 Zulu, short contest on November the 7th, sponsored by the Radio Telegraphy High Speed Club. The bands are 3.5, 7, 14, 21, and 28, and of course, CW only. So you might hear some rapid fire CW going. And given that it's it is overlapping with the ARRL contest, it might really mix things together with the regular speeds and high speeds and slow speeds, a real challenge for CW.
Yep. If you have an SDR and you look at the waterfall and the bottom part of the amateur bands during these contests, it's incredible. You see this massive amount of signals all next to each other on that little part of CW every band. It's just impressive to see all of that.
Yeah, and given that CW cuts through a lot of noise,
yep,
and interference, you may get pileups of stations jamming up on top of each other. So anyways, give it a listen, and it should be a lot of fun. So that's going to do it for us today. We want to remind you once again, though, that next week is the time change, and our show stays at 10:30 Eastern time, but the UTC time will be 15:30 UTC. So yep. If you look for us at UTC time, remember, starting next week, it is 15:30 UTC. Have a great week, everybody. Have a good Halloween today, and let us know what you hear in the way of pirates tonight. It's always a good time to check out what the pirates are up to on their favorite day of the year, Halloween. We will see you again and speak to you again next Sunday with our next edition of the International Radio Report on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. Have a great week, everybody.
Bye-bye. It ain't expected.